Good morning. Today is Friday, the 8th of July. Joining us this morning is Humble Bay Fire Captain.
Deputy Chief.
Oh, you got that one too?
Yep.
Okay. DC, not AC, DC.
Nope, DC.
All right. Billy Reynolds, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. You were a little busy this week, huh?
Oh, yeah. It's that
kind
time of year.
Bookends?
That time of year, for sure.
Yeah, he's smiling. So I think everybody probably has a pretty good idea of the two topics we'll be talking about. So we will get into that once we hit you with a quiz.
All right.
All right. You ready?
Yeah, I think I'm 0 for the last three at least. So.
This one's almost plumbing related, so with the sprinkler stuff you get to play with. Lead pipe cinch. Why do we say lead pipe cinch?
Jeez. I'm trying to think outside the box here. And
oh, wait a minute. You're going to get a pass on it. I didn't realize I put the check off on the second half of the response. All right. So you get the ultimate non-PC one. Let the cat out of the bag.
Oh, jeez. Actually, I'm drawing a blank on this one. It's probably gonna be something super simple, and I'll feel bad later. But
yeah, well, maybe. Just depends if you let it out or not. British tenants who farmed land belonging to gentry were supposed to turn over part of what they produced as rent. Many adhered to the letter of the law, but some old suckling pigs, considered a delicacy and easily carried, without reporting these transactions, went aside. Frequently concealed in bags while being taken to market, black market animals were bought by butchers at bargain prices. By the 18th century, shrewd farmers had learned that in a hasty illegal sale, it was easy to pass off a cat as a young pig. When a suspicious buyer insisted on seeing the merchandise before he paid, he sometimes found his doubts confirmed. Today, a person with inside information may slip and give clues. Even though neither a feline nor a bag is involved, comrades are likely to chide the revealer of the secret for having let the cat out of the bag. And a person who makes a hasty purchase without taking a look at merchandise is still said to have bought a pig in a poke. Two animal options there. And you
all right.
Blew them both.
Blew
huh?
them both.
Yeah, okay. So you want to start with Monday or you want to start with yesterday?
Dealer's choice.
What happened down at Betty's place?
So we got back a little bit after midnight. We got the call for a structure fire, and I was our secondary duty officer. We have our on-shift battalion chief as our main duty officer, and I'm the secondary, so I was listening to the call, and I have to respond if it's anything working. And as soon as the call came in, I think everybody uniformly knew what it was going to be. Unfortunately, with those sitting down there for as long as they did, it was just a matter of time, I think. The weirdness of it being is actually on our training grounds, obviously. So first crew got there.
At least you knew where to go.
Exactly. And the nice thing about seeing those all the time for our crews and their training, all of our crews and with individually have basically said, if this happens, this is what we're going to do. So
you kind of pre-drilled it.
Yeah, kind of pre-planned it, and that's understanding that if it happens, we know exactly what we're going to do. Obviously, it's a dynamic circumstance, not knowing how many are going to be involved, if there's rescues involved with the people that might have been squatting in there. But the first crew got there, found multiple trailers. I think six of them were actually well involved and from stem to stern. So they basically started setting up to basically, one, keep it contained to the trailers that were already burning.
Protect the ones that weren't, yeah.
And also be able to get into the ones that weren't burning to make sure there were no people living in there and whatnot. Unfortunately, they were able to keep it relatively contained to those. There was some damage to some of the exposed trailers and whatnot, but no injuries and no injuries to firefighters, which is, with a defensive fire like that, defensive being that we're not going to put crews inside, obviously, these trailers because there's really nothing to save. But with a defensive fire like that, being able to keep it contained to that area and there's actually a small residence, very small residence, right across from where the trailers are at, right outside our training grounds, and keep it away from there because there's a small family living in there and everything. So it's a tiny little house for sure.
No, I mean small family.
Small family, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So these were just there kind of in a staging area rather than being utilized at this point?
Yeah, they've been there, sitting there for several years. So they were donated several years ago. They were construction office trailers, I believe, at one point for PG&E, and they were donated to Betty's program. And for a variety of reasons, they've sat there for a lot of years. beyond the purview of the fire department. Obviously, we see them every day because they're our training grounds. But they've sat there for several years, and over time, kind of were a little bit worse for wear. Obviously, not in great shape.
So these weren't the ones that we've been hearing discussions about that were that the new facility or new complex that was going to be installed. These were being stored?
I don't believe those are the ones that are involved with the project. I think that these, because of their condition, I'm speaking out of turn here because I'm just going by what I know from media and whatnot. But I believe these were just basically they were going to be used initially, but over time with their condition and whatnot, they weren't able to be used because they were in too poor a shape. So
surplused.
I think that there was a
training units.
Either or. Nobody approached us for training units. Ultimately, that's what it ended up being, quite honestly. But I think that they're going to be surplus and try to find somebody who might be able to put them to use elsewhere.
Now, you referenced that they were at the training facility. Were they inside the compound?
They're actually inside the gate.
So somebody came up and over? Somebody's?
Yeah, we actually have a pretty ongoing problem down at our training facility. We recently put up all brand new fencing around it to help try to deter that. And we had fencing around it, but there were a bunch of holes cut in it from the past. And even with the new fencing, people are up and over or they're cutting through the fence. We've lost equipment before. We do store equipment down there in locked shipping containers to basically for training purposes. And we have had problems in the past with theft and people being on the grounds. For example, we had an old school bus down there we used to train on for basically for mass casualty incidents, things like that. Somebody actually at one point came in and stole the tires off of it. This has been way in the past, but people in and out of our training facility when we're not there is an ongoing problem, and that could have been how people were getting there and squatting and possibly using it to camp in. I don't know.
I don't suppose electrifying the fence is an option.
No, not for us.
Or an option that can be seriously considered.
Not right now.
That's got to be disturbing.
It is.
You know, seeing that, and then having them cut through. It's kind of like what County Office of Ed has too.
Yeah, just, and you would think they would leave the fire department alone because we're there to help people.
Well, there's nothing in there.
But we're just as susceptible as everybody else.
Yeah, but you got hoses that can blow people away with the water. Yeah, I bet you could put a trigger mechanism in there somehow. KINF, lots of sympathy from this end of the room, huh? It's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Billy Reynolds from Humble Bay Fire. So with the fire that happened down in the incidents, I guess, that happens at the training facility, is there anything you guys can do? I mean, is that something that a lot of training facilities are subject to throughout the state? The homes breaking in and stealing stuff and looking for things? We've heard tales of even when you guys are responding to a fire or an incident, it's kind of that you got to post somebody at the truck because things will walk off. I mean, the mindset is just so foreign, I think, to so many of us.
Yeah, you think as a fire department, people understand that we're there to help people and we have this equipment on the fire engines and the apparatus for a reason.
Or just, it ain't yours.
Right.
Get your mitts off.
Absolutely. No, I mean, that's just common courtesy, common sense, obviously, but unfortunately, it is a problem. I don't know about other fire departments that have had issues like that, but I think it has a lot to do with the location of our training facility down at the foot of Hilfiker Street in Eureka. There's a lot of foot traffic down there, not only You know, there's the Hikshari Trail there. It's a really good place for people who are taking a walk. They can see what we're doing as they walk by. There's actually an informational sign posted talking about the training facility and what it is and why it's there. But with that, there's a lot of there's a lot of foot traffic from folks that have nefarious intent. And what can we do?
Oh,
about
you're a fan of GRU, huh? I mean, yeah. All of a sudden, the name starts popping up once the movie. Yeah, okay.
Right. But what can we do about it? Obviously, we're down there during the daytime, and obviously, when we're down there, we don't have the issues. But it's at night when there's, you know, it's at the end of a kind of a dead end street. The street Hilfiker dead ends into the sewer treatment facility. So there's usually not a lot of people down there during the night that are passing by to be keep an eye on it for us. So obviously, we have the.
Do you have it camered up?
There's cameras down there. They don't always catch everything. It's a big facility. You know, we've had good luck with some citizens who are walking on the trail in the evening and stuff. If they have somebody down there, they'll give a call, everything like that. But it's in the middle of the night where we tend to see the people that are hopping the fence or cutting the fence and getting in there and trying to take whatever isn't nailed down.
Can you use the, you know, I know Dalmatians used to run on trucks. How about a pit bull with spots and, you know, the junkyard dog?
That's an idea.
I mean, if nothing else, you know, you guys would probably have an affinity for the dog, which is cool.
Right.
But then it would be protecting the facility, and that's one of the things that I seem to recall either from fire or from cops is people don't mess around with animals.
True enough.
You know, if it's horses or if it's dogs or, well, cats, I guess, are probably subject to all kinds of things.
We actually used to have goats down there for vegetation management. They weren't so good at keeping people out.
No, those weren't Dave and Sylvia's goats, were they?
No. They were one of the retired assistant chief's goats that he put down there to kind of help do vegetation
management. Fire chief, not police chief.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And it was all well and good until one day when we got a call from people that said one of the goats had made its way up to the top of our training tower and was overlooking the edge, and they were afraid the goat was going to jump. He didn't.
They're not that stupid.
No, they weren't.
Turn around, walk back down. Yeah.
But yeah, the goats were they were not a deterrent, though, for sure.
Yeah, they can get kind of nasty.
Yeah.
But I understand they taste pretty good, too, so there's probably a quid pro quo pro.
I've never tried that. So.
Really, you've not tried any? I've done a couple times Greek, you know. I know it's lamb most often, but
my wife and I do consider ourselves foodies, and that's one thing we've wanted to. We just never had the opportunity. So,
he's at the fire station today. Send your recipes down there. Yeah, well, I mean, as you look at some of those types of things, you know, the protection of units. Are the designs changing on board the rigs? Because I would think of paramedics, with so many departments now having paramedics, that would be something that would be of concern. I would think the ambulance guys, because they drive around with a lot of sharp things also,
right,
that they would have certain designs to be able to safely store some of these things so when they're inside the house, somebody isn't inside the rig.
Right.
Are you seeing some of those changes in the gear now?
Absolutely. Yeah, with certain things on the engine, we do keep them under lock and key in a safe, obviously, to, you know, obviously protect them. A lot of engines in the past, they did not have locks on the compartment doors where you store all our equipment. The problem in the past, and the reason they didn't do that, was because if there's a lock on a door, you needed a key. But and if the key gets lost or it's in somebody's pocket when they go off duty or something like that, there's always that complication.
Or they're inside the house and...
Right.
Yeah.
Newer apparatus, actually, you're seeing like the automatic locks on your car where you hit the button on your door and it unlocks all your doors. They can keep them locked until they go inside until they get to the scene, and then they can unlock them and be able to use them and lock them back up when they're out and about. It's sad we have to be that way with fire equipment, but it's a reality, unfortunately.
Well, and not as if these things are less expensive today than they were yesterday also.
Oh, yeah.
So it's an investment protection. As well as, you know, some of the health and safety stuff.
We always joke that if it's a screwdriver, it's going to cost this much. If it's a fire department screwdriver, it's going to cost twice that. So.
Yeah, times two. Yeah. Oh, so are there certain tendencies? Are there things that people will take off of a fire truck? Or is it, if it's not nailed down or super glued or duct taped, it's fair game and everything disappears?
I think it's a tale of two eras. It used to be in the past, I've been doing this, I actually celebrated 29 years in the fire service the other day. It used to be more of chainsaws and other equipment like that. But we see a lot of our medical equipment go missing nowadays because people might be looking for life-saving drugs and narcotics that we carry to help people, to put them to use for their own means. So we tend to see our medical gear get targeted a lot these days.
So it's not the boots that are disappearing?
Not as much
it's
anymore.
It's the syringes.
Yeah.
Or the equivalent
thereof. True enough.
Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time is 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Meet Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Billy Reynolds, deputy chief for Humboldt Bay Fire. Not assistant chief, deputy.
Deputy.
That's the ACDC thing.
Yes.
Good, didn't lose you on that. Code enforcement. In the old days, boy, I think it ended up on fire's doorstep for some reason or another, maybe because it's the potential for fire, is that if grass was too long on somebody's front or if there was garbage piled up on the side and then it became the vermin attraction and whatnot, you'd get a knock on, I understand, you'd get a knock on the door, you guys would knock on the door and say, hey, got an issue, let's clean this stuff up. And 9 out of 10 times, things would be taken care of, or you'd have to have somebody come in, do it, and then there'd be a surcharge hooked to the sale of the property whenever that happened. Boy, we've seen an explosion of a lot of these, was it Waves of Green in America the Beautiful, throughout the city of Eureka. And I don't think it's just Eureka, but that's the one I'm most familiar with. You too. What's going on here? Are you guys getting close to the point of saying, this is a fire hazard? Put us 4 weeks out, and we don't have rain, and now all this grass is dry.
Right.
Now there's tinder boxes all over the place.
Right. Yeah, we do work with city code enforcement quite a bit. They have a pretty robust code enforcement program, but we are the first point of contact for that. If people do see things, if their neighbor's yard is overgrown and they have fire hazard concerns, call us at our main office, and we will send either myself or an engine crew out. And we'll take pictures and we'll evaluate it. And not everything out there that we get called on is a fire hazard. That's why we look at the
dandelion fields are, yeah, okay.
Right.
Okay.
But when you've got overgrown berry briars that are impinging on the house and things like that, absolutely.
Or 2 foot tall grass in the front.
Absolutely. So we'll go out there and we'll basically document it. We'll either get in contact with the property owner or we'll send them a certified letter basically saying, you need to clean your property up and get this taken care of. We do give them a reasonable amount of time to get that done, obviously realizing that if they're a remote owner that has to basically work with their tenant, or if they have to work on getting that taken care of.
Call somebody to mow it down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'll get that taken care of. If they don't get it done within a certain amount of time, we will get code enforcement involved. And code enforcement is, from the city, is actually super proactive, but they just have a lot to look into. So
places of concern.
Yeah, and they have a pretty diverse caseload they have to deal with, but they're pretty good about getting out there and either working with the property owner, or if they have to go the nuclear option, we're about citations and fines and liens and things like that. And if we get to that point, it's usually a little more messy. But most of the time, like you said, 9 times out of 10, people with a little bit of pressure will get their stuff taken care of.
Yeah, or you might find somebody who physically can't, mentally can't. I mean,
right.
The shut-in syndrome, which certainly is real. And there is that gray zone of, okay, how much involvement do you want from government?
right,
with property rights and things of that nature. And yet, on the other hand, that's kind of balanced with, if this thing goes, the neighborhood's going.
Right.
And concerns associated with that. I mean, how do you weigh those, or is that code enforcement's responsibility?
We work with them. For a lot of the fire-related stuff, they do lean on us for the fire code interpretations and whatnot. And they have in the past, with people like you mentioned that have, you know, the inability to take care of themselves, whether they're elderly or disabled or whatever, they will basically, they will be able to provide, it's not a service they provide on a regular basis, but they'll work with them basically, whether it's with city staff or with a contracted staff, to be able to help them take care of the problem. Because a lot of times it's not just neglect, they just don't have the ability, like you said, to take care of it themselves. And again, they need help too. So we want to be able to help.
Yeah, if it's an assist thing, that's one element.
Absolutely. But if it's a capable property owner that's just neglecting the property, that's when things get a little more forceful and the hammer comes out.
Well, and I'm surprised. I would suspect that a large percentage of these are rentals. If you're renting inside of one of these homes, wouldn't you become the squeaky wheel at some point and say, hey, look, this place is overgrown. It's not, nah, 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 nah. Take care of it.
Absolutely, yeah. And tenants, for the most part, are pretty good about it. If they have an issue that they've tried to deal with their landlord, a lot of times the first question we ask them is, have you spoken to your landlord about this? Are they aware of the problem? Well, no, I haven't talked to him yet. Well, it's like, well, first things first, let's call your landlord. Let's make sure that, you know, you guys can handle it, you know, because that's success right there for us. But if they've said, you know, yeah, I've called my landlord and they're refusing to do anything about it, that's obviously when we get involved and are able to say, look, this is a fire hazard. This needs to be taken care of. Here's the code section and here's what's going
to
happen.
And you can't be threatened to be thrown out.
Right.
You know, with the housing shortage that there is, I'm sure that that's an overlay
and
for
that was,
a lot of
exactly,
stuff.
Yeah. That was the next point is a lot of people, though, is they're afraid to call because they're afraid that their landlord is going to evict them if they become a squeaky wheel. So with single-family residences, we don't have the legal ability to inspect those on the interior for their fire hazards. We can do the outside, obviously, for weed abatement and whatnot. Where we do have the ability is on apartment buildings. We basically we're mandated by the state to inspect those on a yearly
basis.
Yeah,
and fire
alarms and smoke detectors and whatnot.
Fire hydrants in the house. Not this year.
Yeah, just wait.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, coming to building plans near you. Yeah,
right. but with the apartment inspection program, that's where we see a lot of people saying, you know, well, they know you're here inspecting anyways. I've got these couple issues that I'd like to see taken care of. And we can evaluate them and say, yeah, this is a legitimate fire code violation. We will basically include that in our inspection report, and they need to get taken care of.
And it's not punitive.
No.
And
no.
I think that there's a interpretation or an attitude sometimes.
Right. Not initially.
Punitive.
But yeah. it can get that to that point.
Yeah, I can't see you being the guy that's out there with the spear.
It's you'd be surprised.
Ooh, all right. We'll be back with the mean one after this.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time is 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Billy Reynolds from Humboldt Bay Fire. 4th of July,
yes.
Seemed like it was relatively calm. Some of the neighborhoods decided to have some independent events. Okay, but didn't hear about too much other than, I guess, that the fight that happened after.
Yeah, I saw some of the social media and the EPD posts on that and everything. That looked like it was a pretty good little event. But for the 4th of July for us...
alcohol or drugs?
Take your choice. I'm not sure.
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay.
But for the most part, I don't know whether to attribute it to the return of the Old Town Festival and people having more to do or what. But we typically go out after the 4th of July Festival and everything. We go out and we patrol neighborhoods. We basically drive around and not really.
Yeah, I think I saw you cruising around a little bit.
Yeah, just to be a presence and kind of if people see us around, maybe they'll have.
I thought you were looking for lunch. It was about that time of the day.
I was looking for lunch. But for the most part, driving out there, you know, and it, once it got darker, it got a little bit, there was a little, because some of the, like you said, the independent shows happening and everything. But oddly enough, we usually have a couple good vegetation fires in the neighborhoods and whatnot during this year. This year, it was very, very, we didn't have any fire calls. After the 4th of July festival for the rest of the night, after the fireworks show and everything, I think the rest of the night we had two calls, and they were all medical.
I would suspect that people are a little bit more sensitive to the fire part, just because it's been so prevalent. We got that thing going on down in Sacramento.
I think so. I think there's that. But I think the other thing is, too, is, and believe it or not, most of the fireworks complaints we get are not people concerned about fire safety or the explosions. It's concerned about their pets.
The noise and the pets
bothering
reaction.
The dogs and everything. And I think a lot of people are really sensitive to that. And they're more inclined to call in and call their neighbors in if their dog is upset than they are worried about the lot full of brush.
Right, right. Or a physical injury to one of the kids.
Right.
But the dog is fine, okay.
Yeah.
So, went about as good as you could have hoped for.
Yeah, really no complaints.
I think a little bit of drizzly rain kind of helps out a little bit, too.
I think so, too. We joke a lot because as the fire marshal for the Humboldt Bay Fire and the City of Eureka and Humboldt Fire District, it's kind of our prevention Super Bowl, so to speak, because there's a lot going on with the inspections of the Old Town booths, with the fireworks inspection booth, and inspecting the big show, making sure it's safe. And I'm always basically prepared for the worst, but this year was absolutely probably one of the smoothest years we've had since I've been doing this.
Who got barge duty?
That was me.
Oh. When you're out there and the event happens, is it over you? Is it out in front of you? Do you get the percussion from the explosions more personalized or more intense? What's it like there on the barge?
The biggest thing is not so much the percussion. It's the little bit of shrapnel that falls down.
Debris?
Yeah, a little bit of debris from the fireworks and everything. I've learned that I don't get worried until the operators get worried. And when I hear them say, "Whoa, that one went off a little bit low," that's when I get a little concerned. But,
or fast.
Yeah. But it's like the old joke. Basically, you just have to be faster than the slowest guy behind you. But honestly, the people that put on the show are very professional. They do a really good job. I've never had any issues with them. But again, though, fireworks are weird animals. Sometimes they don't do exactly what they're predicted to do. So
yeah, they're all not identical. I guess even just with the packing of the products,
right?
That kind of thing,
right?
They get tested at what sun or the day before on the 3rd? Is that when the test on the barge happens, or is it just earlier in the day?
It depends. Or both? It depends on the operator, the gentleman who's done it the last couple of years from the fireworks company. He's basically had me come out the day before, and I'll go through the paperwork and whatnot and check their storage and everything. But then on the day of, when they actually have the entire barge set up and ready to go, I'll go out and do the actual barge inspection of the one that goes out to the bay that shoots them off and make sure they have all their safety gear.
What do you look for? Floating vests or, you know, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, the things like that. But also they need to have fire-resistant clothing like the fire department wears. They need to have fire suppression.
Oh, treated. Yep. They have a uniform,
yes,
so to speak.
Helmets, eye protection. They need to have where the operator stands, they need to have like a barrier between that and the fireworks, so that way they have an area of safe refuge.
Was pre-COVID?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Sorry.
They need to have a way to put the fire out, because if they're out in the middle of the bay, they can't stretch a garden hose out there, so they need to have extinguishers and whatnot and hand tools.
No, but they got water at what? 6 inches away.
But yeah, the big issue is if a firework is supposed to go off and it doesn't, they need to be able to render it safely.
Yeah,
those are the ones that are scary.
Can they just like put it in the water? You have a fish net or something, and just make sure that it doesn't burn off.
I don't think so. That's not something I ever thought of, but I think that I don't think they're able to do that.
So they have a container or something. Yes. They put it in. Okay, or like a burn barrel.
Yeah.
Sort of. Thanks for coming by, bud.
Hey, good to be here.
See everybody on Monday.